My kid turned 8 years old this week, and so I'm going to take this opportunity to ask Wes Smith, the Sage, to give me some advice about parenting. So let's get to it. Welcome to Sage Reverie, a podcast where we seek to live well and live wisely. I'm Mike Wilson.
And I'm Wes Smith.
We live in the great state of Wyoming, and each week, from a biblical perspective, we discuss a trending topic and what others are saying about it. If you're using these episodes for your group, there are discussion questions in the description. And for more information about our ministry, visit church307.com. Wes, how old were you when you guys started having kids?
Wow, great question. I would have been 24 when our first child was born.
And then the last one, making you do math.
Man, yeah, you are. Oh, man, my youngest is 20 now, so I'd be 32 when I had my last child.
One of the big changes in our society is that people used to have kids in their early to late 20s. Mm-hmm. Now, most kids are born to us 30-something. More than 50% of our, at least in America, more than 50% of kids are born to a 30-something. And so I think it's having a lot of impact on the way people parent, because we are in a different situation in life when you're a 30-something than when you're 20-something. When you're 20 something and somebody calls you and says, hey, you want to do something? You're like, yep, let's go. Whatever. Yep. You're a 30 something and somebody calls and says, you want to do something? You got questions.
Yeah.
Right. How long is it going to take? What time am I going to be in bed?
What's it going to cost?
What are we going to do there? Yeah. And so there's this differentiation between what happens when you're 20 and when you're 30. One of the things that happens is we got more money. Mm-hmm. When we're a 30 something. Mm-hmm. And so I often ask the question about spoiling my kids. Mm-hmm. Am I buying them too much stuff? Because I can now. When I was a 20 something, I was dirt poor.
Yeah.
I had nothing. I couldn't buy them anything from the Dollar Tree if I wanted to.
Yeah.
Okay, maybe. But now I can. I've saved up some money. I did Dave Ramsey. I'm good.
Good.
This clip was one of the most viewed clips on YouTube last year. Surprise.
This is your car, girl.
I didn't want a Tesla. I don't like electric cars.
Wait,
I
what?
For Mercedes Benz. I don't like Teslas.
You said you like the electric cars.
I never said I like Tesla. I said a Mercedes Benz. I don't like Tesla.
Well, you gotta like, this is better than a Mercedes Benz.
This is not. I don't want no car that, if I gotta charge it for it to work. I didn't want that.
Girl, you need to be grateful that you got a damn car.
I could've just been walking it. I would rather walk in.
You can get the car.
Right. You should be happy.
Be grateful.
You can put the keys back in your purse.
Oh, and I will. And don't ask me for nothing else. Oh, you're gonna be happy with that money.
How much is this?
Girl, open it up and stop being ungrateful, because now you're starting to be ungrateful where you ain't got to worry about me ever again.
I never said I wanted a Tesla. I always told you I wanted a pink Mercedes Benz.
Okay, well, I couldn't get the Mercedes Benz.
This is all you gave me for my sweet 16 and my golden...
You can go spray
Girl,
paint
you
your Tesla.
Girl, do you know how much that is? That's $1,600 for 16.
That's it for my sweet 16 and my golden birthday?
Do you think that's real? You think they staged that?
I do.
If that's real, I can't even relate to that world.
Yeah, that's crazy.
It seems staged to me. Like, what?
Yeah.
The houses weren't that nice in
right,
that neighborhood.
Yeah, like, exactly. Exactly.
But are you worried at all about kids in our society being too spoiled?
You know, not from the perspective of having things. Oh. Of course, like what we just watched is ridiculous. Right. And of course, you can overdo that. Mm-hmm. Of course, you can overdo that. I think there's a different kind of spoiled that I see that's really hurting us, and that is the lack of giving kids responsibility and accountability for choices and learning through that process. That kind of a spoiling effect, if you mm-hmm. will, could talk a lot more about that. That I think sometimes we worry a little too much about, you know, I gave them a motorcycle instead of a bicycle and that's going to hurt them. Okay. You want to be wise with that. Yeah. You want to be careful with that. But, you know, I don't think that's the main challenge we're facing.
One of the other differentiations between a 20-year-old raising kids and a 30-year-old raising kids is time.
Yeah.
I got a little bit more time on my hands now that I'm not trying to figure everything out from scratch.
Yeah.
And I've learned how to manage my time more wisely.
Mm-hmm.
So I think what a lot of people do with that time is they schedule their kids to death.
Mm-hmm.
They're in every activity. They're in every sport. They're dance lessons, going on constant vacations, just busy schedule. Mm-hmm. How do we decide what is worth our investment? How much of our time should we invest in activities?
It's not just that we have, sometimes we're just as busy in our 30s and 40s. It's just we have a little more control over our schedule, right?
Oh, yeah.
So in our 20s, I wasn't the boss of anybody anything,
yep.
right? I was told when to show up. Now, later in the 30s, 40s, you have a little more say. So you can do a little more of these things. The challenge, though, is, and this is where I think parenting is taking its biggest hit, is that we've become spectator parents instead of partner parents. So it used to be that, I call it apprenticeship parenting. It used to be that as the child grew up, they came to work with us, and or they came to do the thing with us that we did as a side hustle. We now use the term side hustle. Mm. Like, they engaged with us more in our activities, and we taught them through that. There's mentorship, there's apprenticeship, there's that whole process going on.
Demonstration, setting the example.
Yeah. And actually, they're becoming sort of contributing to society and the family earlier, right? And there's this whole process that's going on. Now, there was some dysfunction with that, right? Sometimes it had to be like a kid had to go to the factory at 10 to put food on the table. We don't want that.
Need to have 10 kids so they can run the farm.
Right. So understanding that, we've gone the other way. And so now we want kids to have these opportunities. So we sign them up for all this stuff. And we follow them, and we're spectators, and coaches and teachers do the parenting, and we're spectators and try to like set boundaries and maybe ask them to do a couple of chores at home or whatever. But there we've lost our natural role. And so it's been an overreaction, and we become spectator parents, and it's hurt us as a culture, and it's hurting our families.
So you would say, would you say that even about like activities, hobbies and things like, it's not, you're just talking about work. You're talking about
all
of
kinds of stuff. Absolutely. It is work for me.
Yeah.
My children were involved in my work as much as I could possibly do it. I did not feel like, hey, I don't want to place expectations on them. They should be free to do it. That's bunk, right? In my opinion, you don't want to be overbearing. I don't want to make my kids do what I do for a living, but I try to include them as much as I could to say, yeah, do this with me, learn.
How does that work as a pastor? Now I'm just a little bit selfish in my question, but
how do you
bring kids into pastoring?
Yeah. So I felt like, you know, you'll see a lot of pastors will have their kids maybe running the sound system.
Yeah.
In a smaller community. I think that's a great example.
Yeah.
But you might throughout the week include them in a staff meeting. Now I know some staff meetings you can't do that, but there's some conversations you can include them, and basic ministries. Where can you include them? You don't just send them off, right? Like, where can you include them? I think our healthiest churches have teenagers delivering part of the Sunday morning teaching.
Yeah, that's so true. Yeah.
Right. Like, so there's so many ways we can be apprenticing kids, and as much as possible. And if I had to do over again, I'd do a lot more of that. I would have been apprenticing them in any area I could think of, particularly compassion ministry, right? When I'm serving at the food shelter, when I'm with a refugee and I'm providing counsel and care, like, they're right there with me in that.
Yeah.
So that, it's not that we don't sign them up for, you know, my kids play basketball, you know, it's not, we don't sign them up for that and we go cheer them on. It's not like you don't do any of that.
Yeah.
But we've just become all that. And there's no apprenticing left. There's no mentoring left.
Yeah. Stick them behind a screen and I'm going to go do the real work. And you mentioned chores. I'm curious.
Yeah.
We're having that conversation right now with our kids because they're finally old enough that they can actually do something.
So be careful about this. Be careful about a division of labor at home in which everybody does their own thing, and they're responsible for just their own thing. That's You know, you take out the trash, I'll feed the dog.
Yeah.
Right. No, let's feed the dog together. Yeah. Well, see, that's a problem. See that you're going to mess your kids up.
I don't have a dog because I don't want somebody to have to feed the dog.
Well, but see, how old's your oldest?
Eight.
Just turned eight. I'm going to tell you, they're going to turn out just like you if you don't have a dog.
I've been hoping for that.
No. We want to stop that at this generation.
Okay. All right.
But the thing is like, so a lot of parents, I've got kids and they're kind of a pain. They require more work, but I'm going to have them do some of the work to share the burden. That's how they look at chores, right? Yeah. Like that's not going to work.
Yeah.
It's not going to build what you want to build. Let's feed the dog together. Let's take the trash out together. Let's do these things together. No, you can't do that in everything. Yeah. There has to be some separate. Like you have to clean your bathroom downstairs. We clean ours. There's some of that.
Yeah.
But as much as you can, look at even chores as apprenticeship. You're mentoring. You're developing habits on not just doing a chore, but doing it with excellence, doing it on time. You see what I'm saying? Yep.
We have this fight when I tell Titus, pick up the toy room. And so he will say, will you help me? My statement is always, I will help you as long as I'm not doing it alone.
Yeah.
As long as you are working, as long as it is helping you, we will do it together. Yeah. As soon as you stop, you're doing it alone.
Yeah.
I don't know if that's the right way of doing it.
So you pick up the Lincoln Logs and I'll put the Matchbox cars in the thing. I'm dating myself because that's what my kids, but like let's do this. Each of us have a role, but we're doing we're on mission.
Yeah.
We're on mission. Be on mission with your kids.
Yeah.
Not separate.
Yeah. That's really good. Cause and then in that they can recognize, hopefully you do things well. You do things with a good attitude.
Yeah.
They can recognize, okay, this is how we do things as a family.
Yeah, this is the pace. This is the competency. All the things a wise parent should be teaching.
Yeah.
Yeah.
All right, let's watch this.
My son Frankie is now 19 years old. 19 years old, high school graduate. He has all his shots, ladies. People tell me all the time, you know, why do you talk about your son so much? Because he won't leave. Does he like it when you talk about him? I said, no, he hates it. Well, why do you do it? Because he won't leave. I'll tell you what he likes to do right now. He likes to sit around the house and watch videos of other kids playing video games.
Yep,
true.
See, some of you are clapping. I didn't know that was an actual thing. I asked him, what are you doing? I'm watching other kids playing video games. I said, that's really? Why? Well, they're professionals. I'm like, why would you watch something that you could be doing? Because they're professionals. That's dumb. Really, Dad? Every Sunday, I see you watching football. Yeah. How come you don't play? I didn't even argue. I just cut off the internet.
Yep.
So true. That's one of the, it goes back to last week, the conversation about technology, like looking down at the next generation about how they spend their time. It's like we've done some similar things. That's really good. My kids watch how many YouTube videos of other kids playing video games. And I still am having a hard time wrapping my mind. You know how many of our kids have dreams of being professional video gamers?
Right.
It's like one of the top desired, that and YouTube influencer. That was not my generation. We weren't even thinking about
those things. What's the movie? It's kind of based on a true story, right? Of the kid who's a video game race car driver. And he's so good that they invite him in. He races and wins. Something like that. Gran Turismo or something like that. Yeah. It's because that's how our kids like... video game player is equal with the race car driver.
And as technology improves, we're going to have more. It's actually going to be more applicable. Yeah,
absolutely.
I mean, as these AR goggles actually become more a part of our life, that's an experience that I can actually apply in life. Anyway, I got off topic. When I was first a parent, we had all these plans about the rules we were going to make and our kid, no screen time. And they're going to have all these responsibilities and they're going to eat healthy food and all these plans. And then you get into it and you're just like, that's just hard to live that. And I have some friends that legitimately parent that way.
Yeah.
Like super strict in everything.
Yeah.
And they draw a lot of boundaries, a lot of lines. We've gone pretty far away from our original plans and gotten less and less strict. I don't know if that's the right thing or not. If you look back on your parenting, would you say I would have been less strict or more strict?
I would have focused more on teaching them how to make wise choices instead of insisting on all the wise choices.
Huh.
So I don't know that I would have been as engaged with my kids as I was about the choices they were making.
Yeah.
Like, so I wouldn't change any of that. I think early on, I think one of the great things about having kids older is we're willing to let our kids fail a little more. And I had kids younger and I was worried about them failing. I would have been more okay with letting them fail and work through that younger with us guiding them instead of keeping them from failure as a kid.
Yeah.
So in that sense, I would have been a little less strict. I would have been a little less worried about what other people thought of how I was raising my kids and of my kids. I would have been willing to say, you know what, just mind your own business.
Oh, that's helpful.
A lot more of that. As I look back on it, too much of my parenting was worried about what people thought of our family or whatever.
Yeah.
I would have let that go. And I probably would have been perceived as being less strict because I'd let them fail more. I'd let them make more choices that I knew wasn't going to work out, but I would have been very engaged in teaching wisdom through that process.
I just read Andy Stanley's parenting book and he's a pastor's kid. Mm-hmm. I think a lot about my kids are in this church building a lot of hours.
Yeah.
They're here a lot.
Good.
And so I wonder, like, the church I grew up in would say, here are the church building rules.
Yeah.
No running in church. No sitting on the altar. Right. No, you have to wear this clothes and these type of shoes. And obviously we don't treat our building that way because we see it as a building.
Yeah.
We've relaxed that quite a bit. And like I laid off or I backed off the no running in church rule. Mm-hmm. I was like, these kids are in here all day long, cooped up. And so that's one of the areas where I've relaxed. But what I appreciated about what Andy Stanley talked about when his dad was raising him in a church was he said, my dad was not making the rules about what we could and could not do based on what people in the church thought about him.
Yeah.
And that's helpful to me. Cause I do, I'm an Enneagram 3. Yeah. I want people to think well of me. I want people to be impressed by how good of a parent how well behaved my kids are. Yeah. And I don't want them to ever get into trouble. Mm-hmm. But if I am making rules based on what other people think of me, mm-hmm. I think I got my priorities out of whack.
Yeah. Yeah. Isn't it funny how we treat some of our church buildings like courthouses?
Yeah. Right?
And it's supposed to be this welcoming place where you can be present with God.
Yeah.
And we treat it like a building that's in the legal system that we all would rather avoid.
Yeah. So true.
Sad.
Yep.
Gotta so sad.
Act and dress a certain way.
Yeah. But I know that's off topic. As it relates to our kids, though, you said something there about them being with you. That goes back to the apprenticeship parenting I was talking about. Like, good for you because they're with you.
Yeah.
And along the way, they're picking up part of the mission and vision of what we do in church.
Yeah.
And it should be a place. Jesus was famous because it's been our history from the beginning to say kids can be in church or be around this whole God thing, but they have to do it in a certain way. And Jesus was very, let them come as they are.
Yeah.
So,
and it's not just about what other people think of us and determining rules. It's also what our kids think about the rules that other kids have.
Yeah.
So, when I think about being strict, usually I'm putting it through a filter of, do his friends get to do it or not?
Mm-hmm.
Because it's a lot harder for me to say, you're not allowed to do this if his best friend is allowed to do that. Mm-hmm. So I think a lot about peer pressure and I think that's probably okay to let those things help determine what is allowed and what the example that's coming to my mind right now is the phrase, oh my God. We don't let our kids say, oh my God. Well, all their friends say it. It's just like constant. That is just a constant superlative that they use. And my kid, I remember this was anyways back in kindergarten. He comes home and he's like, Dad, why can't I say, oh my God, everyone else says it? And that is when I adopted a phrase that I now use constantly. We are different. Mm-hmm. This is how we do things. Mm-hmm. This is our family. Mm-hmm. If you're a part of our family, this is how we act. Mm-hmm. And so we're kind of creating, it's not just identity. Rules, identity.
Identity. Yep.
This is our family culture.
Yep.
This is who we are.
Yep. We used to say, if all your kids were going to jump off a cliff, would you?
Yeah.
Which is silly to say.
Right.
Because the easy response is no, yeah. I wouldn't do that.
Yeah.
This isn't that.
Right.
And it was just a lot. Now you're talking about something different. Identity. This is who we are.
Yeah.
And this is what makes us special.
Yeah.
In some ways.
Yep.
And that's better.
Yeah.
That we want to be unique. We want to have
still something. A phrase from Ray Comfort in that one. He always, have you ever seen him do that thing where he walks up to people on the street and he's like, have you ever lied? Then you're a liar. Have you ever stolen? Right. Then you're a thief. And he does that. Right. Well, one of the things he says is, have you ever used the Lord's name in vain? And he says, would you use your mom's name as a cuss word? I totally stole that line from him when I was talking to my son about using, saying, oh my God. Mm-hmm. I actually think using the Lord's name in vain is a much bigger concept than that.
Right. But sure.
Talking to a kindergartner.
Yeah, you can't. Yeah, right.
I was like, would you ever use your mom's name as a bad word?
Right.
No, you wouldn't do that. We honor God. Right. We trust God. That's who we are. It's our identity to honor God. And so when we use his name, we use it in an honoring way. Mm-hmm. But it's difficult. Brilliant.
That's great.
Yeah. But it's difficult to do that. When you know that saying that to him means a sacrifice.
Yeah.
Because that's a big deal when you're a kid.
Yeah.
You want to be like your friends.
Yeah.
You want to assimilate.
Yeah.
And so we got to pick our battles and decide when is this really
absolutely
a hill worth dying on, worth fighting.
Yeah.
And for us,
some of that's a good thing, but too much of it,
it
becomes dysfunctional for him.
The big one I remember when I was a kid was what we can watch and what we can't watch. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Man, we couldn't watch anything. Mm-hmm. I mean, it was Beverly Hillbillies or Full House.
Yeah.
Nothing else. Like, whatever. Yeah. And all my friends, no Smurfs or no, I can't even think of what they are right now, but there were so many shows.
And Smurfs?
No Smurfs.
You couldn't do Smurfs.
My
okay.
My friends were all into Smurfs. I don't know.
What was wrong with Smurfs?
I couldn't even tell. I've never seen Smurfs. I can't. I don't know. They said something was bad about
it. I can't remember Smurfs well enough, but I can't think of anything.
Yeah. Okay. And I resented so much about my childhood for what I think are some rules that my parents created just out of fear.
Yeah.
I grew up in a family where we boycotted everything.
Okay.
Couldn't shop at Target because they sold bagged magazines. We couldn't. Right. There were all these, this long list of things we could not do.
Yeah.
And I just felt like some of those were just overreactions. Mm-hmm. To hype that the church built up about the dangers. Mm-hmm. I just got an email about some show that's on Amazon and about how we should all get our kids off Amazon Prime because there's a bad kid show on there. I'm like, okay, then we won't watch that show. Like we're not going to swing the pendulum and be too strict. But I grew up in Christian schools. My dad was a Christian school administrator. Yeah. So I got a ton of Bible teaching.
Okay.
I mean, Bible class every day. In addition to that, we're going to church two or three times a week, Wednesday night, Sunday morning, Sunday night,
just
tons of Bible teaching. And I appreciate that now in my life in that I think most of the scripture I memorized when I was in elementary school.
Yeah.
And I rely on that a lot. And my views have changed a lot, but just learning the Bible has been so valuable to me. I can quote entire chapters that I memorized when I was a little kid. Are you worried at all that our kids, especially those that are going to public school and church maybe once a week if there's no basketball game, are you worried that our kids are not getting enough Bible teaching?
Yes and no. I think, yes, we all need more Bible teaching. It's the guidebook for how we were created and how we can live at our best and for eternal life.
Mm-hmm.
So of course, the more the better. One of the things though, I've been really encouraged. I think thoughtful parents these days have found ways through technology to have better discussions and engage in teaching their kids the Bible than even in my day.
Yeah.
So you just talked about how you learned the Bible, right? You went to a private Christian school, you had some classes, regular classes. You paid attention sometimes and other times, but you learned quite a bit. You memorized stuff. You sometimes, though, our familiarity with something in an academic setting, actually, we don't absorb it deeply.
True, yeah.
So many of us did not absorb as deeply as when it was taught a different way in more ancient times.
Yeah.
And I actually think there's a, so can we quote scripture? Sure. In the King James, right? You can quote in the King James, but did we absorb all that? And did that have an impact on our lives? Well, as we look back, not necessarily the impact it was supposed to have. It was not seed planted deeply. Where I think these days we have opportunities to engage. So you might watch The Chosen.
Yep.
And you might watch that with your kids and be able to have conversations about what you're watching. You know, we didn't have that opportunity a few years back, right? The great one that I think is impacting Wise families right now is the Bible Project. If you have kids, say upper grade school, junior high, high school, one of the amazing things you can do at dinner time is take one of the Bible Project clips, 15 minutes or so, and watch that. They also have a great app. Like, I think now there's better ways than ever for entire families to engage. I think the Bible Project's the best way. Not many churches do this as well, where you can engage on an evening basis with your kids and do this. And so I think, will families take advantage of this? I don't know. But I think now we can integrate this into our pattern of living and our conversations rather than what'd you learn in Sunday school? What'd you learn here?
Yeah.
And some of that. And I think there was real good there.
Yeah.
But I think it can be even better now.
Yeah. It is the highlight of my day every day. And I don't just say that because I'm supposed to, because I'm a pastor. Every day after dinner, we all eat dinner together and then we stay at the dinner and we do a devotion. And it's usually just reading scripture and then talking about what it said.
Yeah.
And we use a children's Bible that we've been using since the kids were, I love it. Like it's absolutely brilliant in the way it helps kids apply. What does the story mean?
It's brilliant. I think your oldest is 8 years old.
Yep.
I think you'll have to make a shift as they get older so that you learn together. You're not the primary teacher. I think one mistake, especially us pastors make, is we know the Bible, right? And we teach the Bible for a living and we kind of like doing it. We like to hear ourselves talk, but we also say some good things.
Yeah.
So we become pontificators at the dinner table. And I think Christians who have been Christians for a multi-generations do this. It's not just pastors. The parents like to sort of become the pontificator. And so that's why I mentioned the Bible Project. As your kids get into like high school, it's better that you hear something and learn and comment together.
Yeah.
Not just be the pontificator of truth.
That's really good.
So
I've seen that example in a lot of the families that I say, man, they did a good job. And it's what they believe is a family conversation.
Yeah.
Not this is what dad says.
Yeah.
This is what dad told us we believe.
Yeah. By about 12, a kid has to start wrestling. Are they going to believe this for themselves? And it has to start to become their faith. And that'll take 12 to maybe 30, that whole process, depending on the situation. But if you at 12 are still sort of the pontificator, that's a problem.
I was talking about Andy Stanley's book, and the big concept of his book is that the primary goal of parenting should be that your friends or your kids are your friends when they're in their 20s. That's your goal. And I wrestle with that a little bit. I do want that.
Yes.
I want my kids to like me when they're in their 20s. I want to have invested well in all the stages of parenting so that when they're adults, we have a good relationship.
Yeah.
But for me, the pinnacle of parenting is, are you a follower of Christ? Are you a sold out on fire? Like, that's what I want. I want children who are pursuing God with all of their heart. And so really that's my primary motivation in parenting. I'm not necessarily saying I disagree with him because there's good points there.
Sure.
Would you say?
Well, we all want that.
Yeah.
We all want to be the friends. You know, the biggest mistake I made as a parent is that I taught my kids how they should live and how they should follow Christ. But I did not make enough of a priority to introduce them to Christ and help them build a relationship with Christ. I was a little more worried about how to live right, following Christ even, but how to live right instead of meeting the person who died for them.
Wow.
And there's reasons for that. There's, you know, have your insecurities apparent. There's all these things, but you want to guard them from danger and all. But if I had it to do over again, that's the biggest thing I would do. I would create moments when they could meet him and have have a deep relationship because he is a person. He's not just a force out of nature that has laws to live by.
Yeah.
He's an actual person to know. Mm. And those of us who have given our lives to him is because we've fallen in love with him.
Yeah.
I don't follow Jesus because I think he's the smartest person who ever lived. Mm. I follow him because I love him.
Yeah.
I give my life for him. He's that great. And I want, I wish I would have done a better job of making sure that was the priority.
Yeah.
Instead of Jesus said, and right. here's what Jesus follow, said, you do this, follow this. Yeah, yeah. Follow obey.
You are the second DS I've had this conversation with this year who said that same thing. I had this conversation with Tim Purcell this year, and he said the exact same thing about his kids. It's the difference between relationship and religion. And he was talking about how over generations, maybe one generation has an emotional, relational connection to God. And then when they hand off their faith to the next generation, that generation becomes more legalistic in their relationship towards God.
Yep.
And then if that happens, if that transition happens, then the third generation will turn their back on God.
Yep.
And so I don't think that's like a formula to follow, but
I think
it's helpful advice for us to remember that God's love for us is unconditional. And the way that we should hand off our faith to our kids is by falling in love with him, not by following him just through obedience.
Mm-hmm. Yep. Yeah, absolutely.
Good. That's incredibly helpful. And I'm sure we'll have a lot more conversations about parenting because I've got a lot more questions, but we're out of time today. So thank you for joining us. Whether you're a parent or not, we all are impacted in the way that our society is parenting the next generation. And so we'll continue to pursue this. As you go, know that Jesus loves you unconditionally and he died to give you new life.